Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 10th of February, 2021. On the podcast today, Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence Minerals, provides an update on the Amapa iron ore project in regards to the settlement terms proposed by the secured bank creditors. Also on the podcast, Neil Rickett, CEO of Visarion, talks about the recent developments with regard to the company's graphene-enhanced face mask. Plus, Glenn Goodman, former ITV news business correspondent, now the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about the bubble in Bitcoin and whether this time round the sell-off on crypto could cause a sell-off in stocks. Cryptos mentioned include Bitcoin, Ethereum, Stellar, Comp, Loopring, Zcash, and Cardano. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the most read RNSs. You can check these lists out at voxmarkets.co.uk, or you'll see lots of other content. There's one there on 80 Energy. There's one there on What's the Alba Minerals Resource webinar hosted by Vox Markets. There's Dan Hanbury, UK equity fund manager at River and Mercantile, discusses outlook for UK equities with Paul Hill there. Plus, Blue Star Leaf Mobile acquires Eastside Games for $159. Million dollars, actually. Plus, our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Your Gene Health, up 10% to 13.5. Biggest faller, Fusion Antibodies, down 8% to 110. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence Minerals. KDNC is ticker there. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. It's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, in this cold, wintry morning, a nice update to warm the cockles of the shareholders' hearts there. Share prices up. Update on a Amapa iron ore project, which, of course, is a big project there with big potential. And we'll get into that in a bit. But as always, though, Kieran, it's not just about this. You've got other sectors of the business, of the company. So give us a brief summary as to what Cadence is all about, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So Cadence is an investment vehicle listed on AIM, ticker KDNC. We have investments in the lithium and iron ore sectors, both two commodities which are critical for the resurgence out of COVID and the resurgence of electric vehicles. And we have the Amapa project, which we will go on to in a second. We have MacArthur Minerals, which is an iron ore project in Australia. And we have equity stake in European Metals Holdings, a strategic lithium project in the Czech Republic, and some JVs in other assets, including Bacanora Lithium, which also recently did an update.
Yeah, it's all getting hot as well, isn't it? The EV space, you can see a lot more news coming out, bigger adoption of electric vehicles, and all that's just getting hot as well. But let's focus on this bit of news now. Update on the Amapa iron ore project. What's this all about, Kieran?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've just released an announcement where one of the critical things to get our 20% into the Amapa project was to get a settlement agreement with the banks. Now, we announced in September last year that we'd got an agreement in principle. It's been taking some time. We've got three banks, three different business cultures who are just taking their time to get their act together, and you know, and really we're just through those final parts of discussions and then you know producing a settlement document. So you know that has been ongoing. Meanwhile, and this was prior to us reaching a settlement, Dev, the owner of the asset, had filed a petition to allow the shipment of the first net $10 million worth of iron ore stockpiles, so that we could pay the labor creditors and also start investing in the asset, starting those commissioning studies, which are all critical to getting this mine back into production, which is then what we want to be doing. So they filed that. There was various to-ing and fro-ing in terms of various courts, appeals by the banks on at the higher court, and which got upheld, and there was an interlocutory injunction put in place. But yesterday we found out that effectively the higher court have ruled in favour of Dev, saying that actually, yes, it should be able to ship this initial first $10 million worth of net $10 million worth of iron ore and, you know, carry out those activities. So it's great news because it does allow us, Dev to move this forward and start shipment of the material. And also, you know, there's also great news that we're still progressing with the banks. So I think it's, you know, a double whammy of good news there. I think the next things that we'll be doing is, you know, getting moving in both of those aspects. So, you know, try to get that settlement agreement finalized as soon as possible and executed, and start moving the material.
Yeah, and you say that this is remaining a major precondition to make an initial 20% investment in the MAPA project. So, do you need to raise funds for that, or do you have the funds?
No, not at all. So we don't need to raise any funds because we actually raised those funds in July 2019, and they've been sitting in a judicial escrow account. So that was the $2.5 million or 10 million reals at the time. And that's been sitting there and really just waiting for the settlement agreement. So as soon as the settlement agreement is executed, that $2.5 million vests, we get our 20%, and there we go. We're in there, and we then can start recognizing part of that revenue associated with the sale of the stockpile. And it's, you know, that's really positive and move forward. Our next stage of investments is once all the licenses have been granted, which will be, you know, in the coming year. But we've already contributed, and that's $3.5 million for 7%, but we've already contributed a proportion of that, and that's been credited against there. So at this point in time, in relation to this, we don't need to raise any capital. And that's really positive as well for shareholders.
Yeah. So, you know, like you say, things don't run as smooth as possible when dealing with different jurisdictions and all that stuff and regulatory bodies. But so over the next, 3, 6, 12 months, what are you hoping to achieve then, Kieran?
Yeah, well, as you rightly say, things don't all run always smoothly. So I'm going to anchor that answer with from events. So I think, you know, once the settlement agreement, so once we start shipping material and, you know, the settlement agreement is finalized, you know, we're going to start production from the stockpiles. The recommissioning period, that we'll then begin recommissioning studies almost soon after that, which will take about 6 to 12 months to get that done. We, at the same time, will actually start some of the recommissioning recommissioning work, which is about 18 months. But all in all, we look to have new production from the mine between 18 and 24 months from the point that we start moving the material and shipping. And, you know, in between that, we'll have 18 months of production from the 1.4 million tons of 1.4 million tons of iron ore stockpile that is there, which is, you know, a large proportionate of the average grade is about 62%. And so there's going to be revenue from there. And in the shorter term, you know, we've always said we want to get a scoping study out. So that scoping study should allow the public to understand the potential value in terms of actually hard NPV figures from doing scoping study level work within about 50% level of accuracy. So that coming out is also going to be important for investors to understand what we understand at the moment. So, and we've already done some of that. We've got the mineral resource estimate has been done. Internally, we've completed the mine plan, which is looking positive. The real big outstanding item we just need to complete or get done, really, is the conditioning engineering report on the plant. And then we're nearly there on the scoping study. So hopefully over the next, as I said, from once the movement of shipment of material starts, you know, we're going to closer around that time, we'll get a settlement agreement. We'll also get in place we'll get the scoping study, and then it's, you know, towards production and revenue. It's revenue from the stockpiles and production after that.
Yeah. And just for people, just a reminder of the potential size of the prize here, you know, going back to maybe Anglo-American or the figures you have, what's the potential here?
Well, I think the simplest potential is to look at Anglo-American's written off value when they last had it and gross it up, because they didn't have a full 100%, but the 100% written down value was $600 million. So we're getting 27% for $6 million. So I think for Cadence, this is a great investment and a potential prize there. And, you know, that value obviously changes depending on economics, but that's a good prize to be aiming for.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Three reasons then, Kieran, if someone's liking the sound of this, and of course your other projects, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Cadence to their watch list, please.
Yeah, absolutely. First reason, I think we've just gone through it, a mapper and the value there that we potentially have, assuming that everything can be executed, you know, an Anglo-American value of $600 million for an investment of $6 million for 27%. We also have several other assets which are all at the stage where they're getting up that value curve. We have EMH, which has got a great partner, and that is going through the process of getting its bankable feasibility study done, and has performed incredibly well in the last 6 months. We have our JV with Bacanora. They just came out with an announcement. They're starting site construction. They're ready to produce lithium from they're looking at 2023 for production. And we have other JV assets which are going well. So we have those two things. And then lastly, when we look at what's happening in terms of the resurgence out of COVID, the adoption of electric vehicles, we're in those two commodity spaces, which I think some analysts, form part of the coming super cycle, which are going to be very commodity specific, and that's in lithium and in iron ore, and rare earth minerals.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff, Kieran. Good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. It's a pleasure as always.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion. You're right, Neil?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And how are you?
Good. I'm trying to keep warm in my office here, but it's not working. I've got two heaters on. It's just not working at the moment. It's still a bit chilly.
To be honest, I had a video interview earlier and I put one of our Vesarion base layers on to demonstrate it, and I've kept it on, but I'm absolutely bloody freezing.
Yeah, that's a good plug right there. It's a base layer. We'll discuss that in a bit. And also the graphene-enhanced masks. But as always, Neil, quick summary. Vesarion, what's it all about?
Okay, so Vesarion is an advanced materials group. We specialise in commercialising new materials that probably weren't around a few years ago, especially things like graphene, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, in fact, the graphene enhanced mask, because you've done an update. What is this update about?
Well, there's two things here. Firstly, this is a FFP3, so a 99% filtration rate mask. Mm-hmm. It's a unique design, or a relatively unique design, in that it doesn't have a filter, a valve. Yeah. And the reason that that's important is because when you're wearing these things, it's great for you that your inward breath is filtered, but if you're just exhausting through a valve, it means that you're potentially putting everybody else at harm with the virus that we're going through at the moment. So not having a valve is extremely important, and something that's taken us a while to achieve, because you need to, when you're doing this testing, you need to look at things like breathability and clogging and making sure that the leakage and things like that are all well contained and within the mask. And that's what we've announced today, is that we've we've achieved the EN 149 standard for this particular type of mask, which is a great achievement for a relatively small team.
Yeah. And how are they going at the moment? Are they selling well?
We haven't started selling these yet. So the first stage is to get the EN 149, which allows you to import these into the country. So we're starting going through the import process now. We'll try and get these on sale as quickly as possible. You know, the kind of people that are using these types of masks, they tend to be more industrial than consumer. The FFP2 mask that we do is fit for purpose for most people. These have got two straps, so they're really good for people wearing hearing aids, which we've had some issues over the FFP2 mask being worn by that particular group of people. And, you know, you're looking at kind of dentists and people like that that have to wear this kind of standard if they're kind of interacting with people on a very close basis.
Okay, so is this now? I mean, of course, it helps with COVID and coronavirus around. But do you see this being commercial beyond that?
Yeah. I think this is coronavirus isn't going to go away in our view. There will be lots of mutations. We'll probably end up having annual vaccinations as we do with the flu. The thing with this mask is that it's the first mask that we brought onto the market that is inherently antiviral against SARS-CoV-2. So the outside layer is effectively your protection, not only in terms of filtering, but also specifically around this antiviral protection.
Yeah, got it. Tell me about other products in the range of, you know, I mean, graphene enhanced. You talk about base layers. Tell me about that if you could, Neil.
Yeah, so our first textile products have arrived in the UK. 75 have gone out to the investors that bought them. They sold out within a couple of minutes of going on our website. The rest of that batch, that initial batch, they have all gone out to professional users and people that want to test them. They've gone out to a lot of sports goods companies that we're dealing with. And the initial feedback is really, really good. We've got some great testimonials on Twitter from some of our shareholders that have been using them in anger. I've been obviously testing it. I had the pre-production one. I actually gave the pre-production one to a shareholder as well to try in anger on cycling. The results that have come back are good. So we're now in that process of getting those base layers to the point where we can sell those as well. So this really is about bringing these products to market now. It's no longer an interesting science experiment. It's now being put into products that people will be able to buy. And as an engineer, that's what we like to do. We like to design products. We like to get those products out there to sell.
Okay, so what parts of the business are you most excited about at the moment, Neil?
Well, obviously, the graphene business is making significant progress. We're actively involved in our project, the G-Scale project, the project and our TDAP project, and they're starting to get some really, really interesting test results that we announced in the interims a couple of weeks ago. And as I said before, this is all about getting that technology out there now. So we're engaged on a daily basis with big companies and looking at the deployment and the evolution of this technology.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Neil, as always then, three reasons, if you could, please. If you're listening to this, likes the sound of it, but not yet following the story, three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Vesarion to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, the first reason is that this is a really interesting new technology that's starting to make its impact in the world. Graphene, has been reported, will have a major impact on us. The second thing is the foundations that we built as a company with the University of Manchester, the University of Cambridge, Innovate UK, and a lot of our stakeholders is unique. And the third thing is that this is an enabling technology for a lot of other industries, whether that's electric vehicles or that it's the Internet of Things. It'll be reliant on technology such as graphene in order for it to make those industries come alive.
Marvellous stuff. Neil, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is the crypto trader. Everyone comes to Glenn for chats, including the BBC. It's Glenn Goodman. You're right, Glenn.
Yes, not bad, thank you, Justin. How are you?
Now, normally we record on a Tuesday for chats, of course, but you Justin, sorry this week I can't do because I've been called by the BBC to discuss Bitcoin and Tesla and all things related. So you are the go-to guy now. Who are you talking to on the BBC, by the way? Who was you chatting to? I didn't see it. I saw your Twitter, you know, screenshots, but who was you chatting to?
It was Mike... I've forgotten his surname.
Mike's fine. That's right. Mike from the BBC.
Mike from the BBC. Yeah, you'd recognise him. He's one of those. He's one of those long time presenters.
Has he got a roundish face with thinning hair? Is that right? And he's a bit nasally. He sounds like he's got a cold. Is that the guy? Anyway, listen. Let me ask a question. So I didn't. Yes. I saw your Twitter thing. I don't know if you said this or if I thought this. But so Bitcoin has gone bonkers, right? Because of Elon, as you call him. Everyone else calls him Elon, of course. He said, just my closest friends, call me Elon, please.
been doing that in interviews. So, still, I keep saying, I mean Elon.
Yeah, so Tesla has bought $1.5 billion, apparently. I don't know if they can prove this, but $1.5 billion of Bitcoin, and it's gone nuts. Yeah. Now, I thought in my head after a while, hang on a sec. The two biggest bubbles at the moment are Bitcoin and Tesla, aren't they? And I don't know if you said this, and you talked about bubbles, because you mentioned bubbles.
Yeah, I said this, man.
So essentially, if there's a fall-off in the price of Bitcoin, if some big whale sells and it creates selling and gets selling, then the value of Tesla will also fall. Now, if that starts selling, begets selling, that could create a market sell-off, because that's a big company now, couldn't it? Did you say that in the news thing?
Basically, what I said was that, I said it's a bubble investing in another bubble. So effectively, you have got that kind of risk of a snowball effect. But I also pointed out, I did BBC, Radio 4 as well as... that was a longer interview. And I explained there that the problem is that the US accounting rules... say that if basically Tesla have bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin, which is not a huge chunk of their cash reserves, but it's big enough to make a difference to their profit and loss. Because
how much
of course,
cash they got then? I thought Tesla wouldn't have much cash, to be honest, because they're not. They've
got $19 billion.
Have they?
Spare cash?
Wow.
Invested 1.5 of it. Yeah. Yeah. But, you see, they have a profitability problem so far. Well, not a problem exactly, but, you know, considering they're, by market cap, one of the biggest companies in the world, it's kind of notable that they still don't actually make much money from selling cars and so on. So they're in a situation where profitability and the profit and loss statement still matters, I think, ultimately. Even though the stock price is in a bubble at the moment, it won't be forever, and people will pay attention to their profit and loss at some point. And the situation they've got is, with the accounting rules, that if the value of their Bitcoin goes down, they have to report that as a loss. So if this $1.5 billion becomes worth, say, $500 million, which is not by any means out of the realms of possibility, because Bitcoin was, you know, it's risen so much in recent times, it could easily fall just as much. You know, that's what happens with volatile issues, as we know. So they'd have to report that as a loss on their statement. But the inverse of that does not stand by US accounting rules. So if the value of Bitcoin goes up and they're making a big profit on their Bitcoin, they can't declare that as a profit until they actually sell the Bitcoin. So unless they make the big decision to offload that Bitcoin, then they can't report it as a profit, only as a loss if it goes down. That's a bit of a major disadvantage, I'd say, for a company to invest
because
if they sell it,
I mean, a big chunk of that, and he announces he sells it, that's going to hit the sentiment of Bitcoin and probably all other cryptos, all other altcoins. But that bubble, I think you're right, that bubble in a bubble almost, that could create the next sell-off in the market. Really could, because there's so many people who follow him, just blindly follow him. Like I said, Tesla is also, no one knows how to price this. And like I said, it's gone up and up and up, and it's now valued to more than all the combined car manufacturers altogether, pretty much. And so it's a massive bubble. Now, I just think there is huge contagion issues here for the whole entire market, not just for, you know, crypto and thing, but I think one sentiment, and we need probably another correction. We will probably have one this year, another correction. That may be the source of it. You know, I genuinely think that, because it's really are falling from a great height.
And if stocks plummet, like they did back in March 2020, you'll remember stocks plummeted, and Bitcoin plummeted along with it. Have things really changed that much in the Bitcoin world since? Bitcoin is certainly a lot more accepted and more established than it was a year ago.
But even so,
I suspect that if stocks crashed, Bitcoin could very well crash along with it, just like it did last year. But there is a plus side. I don't want to be all negative, a negative Nelly nonstop here, because there is a plus side, which of course is the fact that if Elon Musk has invested lots of Tesla's cash reserves in Bitcoin, that now sets a good precedent for other companies to do the same. Now, I'm not expecting every large company to suddenly start investing in Bitcoin overnight, because frankly, cash reserves of major corporations are usually invested in cash equivalents, like treasury bonds and sensible things like that. You know, it's not like they have huge share portfolios usually, your average company. And likewise, I wouldn't expect them to start having massive cryptocurrency portfolios either, because then you end up like that company MicroStrategy, where your share price basically tracks the price of Bitcoin fairly closely because you're so heavily invested in it and dependent on the fortunes of it. But nonetheless, as I say, this does set a precedent that it's okay to do this now. And you're bound to have in earnings calls with big companies over the coming months, loads of people saying to the, you know, collaring the directors and going, why aren't you putting some of our reserves in Bitcoin? They're earning virtually nothing in the bank. Look, because interest rates are so low, you should be doing what Elon Musk is doing. So, you know, there's going to be some peer pressure going on. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if corporations start investing in Bitcoin, it's still the market cap is only in the hundreds of billions. So, you know, if big corporations start putting some of their money into Bitcoin, it's going to drive the price up further. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the price of Bitcoin went up a lot further, but it is very frothy, you know, because it's been rising so fast. So yeah, it's a bit of a difficult situation at the moment with old Bitcoin, because it's risen so far and so fast that my natural instinct is to say, well, there's got to be a big correction soon, surely.
We said this a couple of weeks back, and literally, and because Elon Musk then, it's gone up higher again. And I did say recently, I said, if you look at the RSI, it's really odd, because this is not a good thing. When a share price hits new highs, but the RSI doesn't, then that's showing a bit of a strength isn't there for a big rally. And it's happened again, literally, the last rally we had, it went up to, 89 on the RSI, and that's when it hits 40,000. And then it come back down to, 32,000. Now it's rallied to 46, and now the RSI is just about 74. So, yeah, and do you know what? I was talking to someone yesterday, I'm not going to say who it was, but he was saying him and his son are investing in Bitcoin, and they're trying to make more money than each other. And I said, yeah, but I said, it's frothy. He said, it's trading in there. I said, oh, yeah, I don't like to do trading. He said, no, but I don't know. But he said, you know, it's only going to go higher. And I said, everyone's thinking that. It's only going to go higher. And generally, the stock market crashes when everyone thinks there's no downside. You know, because everyone's in, and
I've been trying to gauge sentiment, but there are a lot of people on Twitter, sort of financial advisors and so on, who I've just been reading their tweets to try and work out what their clients are saying to them. And a lot of them are trying to convince their clients to buy Bitcoin now because of what it is and how much it's rising. And some of them are saying, oh, my clients are still refusing to buy it. So maybe there is still not that consensus out there. Maybe we haven't reached that point where everybody wants to buy Bitcoin. I don't know. It's very hard to judge these things. You know, we want that proverbial shoeshine boy, don't we, from which I wrote about in my book,
my father, the
1929 story about how the shoeshine boy was giving
Don't mention it.
Why don't mention it? Why?
Because I mention it every weekend on the weekend podcast, and the weekend my mates just make fun of me, saying, oh, isn't there a story about that? About a guy, and they change their names every time. I know. I'd mention it so often. No, but my father, I think this is the shoeshine guy. He's like the 75-year-old guy who asked me about buying Bitcoin at 32, or in fact, as 40 it was, it went back to 32. But again, he's probably saying to me, why didn't you let me buy it at 40? You know, so people now who were at 40, and it's people collected them saying, don't buy it here, it's an all-time high, and it's rallied again. They're probably getting in now at 46, 47, you know? So it's like, I think the top is very close.
Maybe, well, it's very maybe mainstream again now, isn't it? Let's face it. And the last time 50,000? I was being invited on mainstream things like Radio 4 and BBC One, because this was on BBC One as well. So once we were on BBC One and Radio 4, the last time that happened was in 2017. And then I went through a few years where I'm on, like, you know, the BBC Rolling News channel and sort of, you know, the stuff that isn't quite so high profile. And now we're back on the mainstream again. So, yeah, there's a toppy sign for you, the fact that I'm being invited onto onto the news outlets that the older people
But do you know, again, I just realised, when Glenn is on mainstream TV talking about crypto, that's the top. They're only interested at fever pitch when things are boiling. When things are boiling, when things are boiling over, it rises to the top of the news agenda or close to it. That's when it's boiling, red hot. And and similarly, when you get the big sell-offs and if you get on for like 2 or 3 days and then it gets to the mainstream media and it's on News at 6, that's when it top up in long-term funds. You know, that kind of thing is when in next week, so give it a week to cool off, then start topping up in your fund and that's when you get a good price. But do you know what I just realised then? What I realised we're seeing here is last time stocks fell and Bitcoin fell in sentiment alongside it, you know? This time... Yeah. I think it's the other way around. I think the first time ever we're going to see how powerful Bitcoin's become, it's going to fall and it's going to provoke a fall in stocks because Tesla's in there and they'll take a hit. That's one of the biggest, hottest stocks, most well-known stocks around. And so now the crypto will lead the markets, whereas before the markets have loved crypto. That's just showing how powerful, how mainstream the crypto's become, you know?
That will be very interesting if it happens that way around, I must say. The problem, the real dilemma we have at this stage of a frothy market is, and it's the same in 2017, is that, you know, the price can rise so fast after this. Yeah. That's what, and it's really hard to resist. It was the same in the sort of dot-com bubble in the late 90s when everybody was taking the mickey out of Warren Buffett because he was refusing to get involved in the craziness that was going on. But, you know, while he was proved right in the longer run, there's that temptation, isn't there, that, okay, what if the price of Bitcoin doubles and doubles again from here, which it could easily do before it crashes? Then maybe I'd feel a bit stupid not being involved in it. So I'm still kind of
keeping a foot in it. Are you not in it?
No. I'm in and out is what I'm doing, you see. I'm trying to be a little bit more short-term in my trades. Not short-term, but sort of, you know, trading the intermediate trends so that hopefully I wouldn't get caught out by a massive... you know, by the big one, as it were, the big crash.
Listen.
So I'm just trying to trade the kind of, you know, the trends that last for maybe a week or even a month, but not like the big trend anymore, because I don't want to get stuck in that.
I reckon it's going to touch 50 again and it's going to come down. I've just been looking at the chart going back to December. You probably remember this, December, January 2017, sorry, December 2018. January 2018, we know what happened then. That was the last sort of big crazy rise when Bitcoin hit the news headlines pretty much before this time. And I look at the RSI there, right? Exactly the same what's happening here. In December the 7th, 2017, Bitcoin hit 16,000. The RSI was at 894, right? So higher than it is the last one. Then it came back down a little bit, rose again to almost 20,000. The RSI, though, didn't. RSI came down to 80. And just to say, it rallied again on less strength. And then all of a sudden, we know what happened from there, don't we? It grinded lower and lower for the next 3 years. And the winters, the crypto winters may be shorter now because there's more institutional investment, more liquidity. But what I'm saying is that we're setting up here for a similar kind of formation on the RSI and the strength and the momentum that we had back in 2017-18. When that crash happened in the winter of 3 years. So it's been interesting to see. Like you say, it may rally again on froth for a while yet, but I reckon 50,000. When in doubt, always look for the round figure. 50,000, it's touched that recently. Let's see if it gets up above that again. And but yeah, I think, you know, people will be saying, I told you so, didn't I? When people see it never coming down, that's always a worry. You know, I think that's it's going to get harder and harder now to get to double your money from here. It's going to get $100,000. That's and that's the market cap is massive then, isn't it? You know.
Exactly. Well, that's partly why I'm concentrating mainly on looking at smaller cryptos now, the ones that are still doubling and doubling and doubling. And there have been plenty of them in recent weeks. Well, at the moment,
Let me ask you a question. My nephew's he's actually in hospital, actually. He's got rushed in. It's scary. But he's into crypto, and he held ETH. He bought it around about 800, I think, or 600. And he's holding that. It's amazing. Hold, if you get a good price, just hold, because you know it's regarded as one of the best and one of the biggest, brightest futures. He's talking about Bitcoin, and he's Cardano, you're talking about, and Litecoin. What do you think of those?
Yeah, Cardano is doing very, very well at the moment, and I've been in and out of it. I've made some profit there. Comp, I've just bought. XLM, that's Stellar, in other words. LRC is another one. ZEC, I literally, my stop order has been triggered while we're recording this podcast, so I'm now in
these,
that.
What are the names of these as well?
ZEC is short for Zcash, and that's one of the famous ones. It's an anonymous cryptocurrency, you know, helps people do, basically it's one of those that might eventually get banned, because you can't ban a decentralized cryptocurrency, but you know, it could be outlawed by the United States because it allows anybody who's doing nefarious things to kind of hide their identity fairly successfully. But nonetheless, Zcash, I like the chart, I like the technology. And I've just
Zcash? What is it? What does it do?
Well, I've just told you. Anonymity is the main calling card. Yeah. So and you know, in a world where Bitcoin is not anonymous, contrary to popular belief, and police do track down people who use Bitcoin for nefarious deeds. So basically what I'm saying is I want to invest in the thing that the criminals want to use. It's a growing market for criminality. No, I don't know. Zcash is clever, and it can be used, you know, by let's look at it in a more positive way. It can be used by people in totalitarian countries like China and so on to cloak their identity and allow them to experience some freedom of transaction which they wouldn't otherwise have. And that's the benefit of it. Criminals, let's not talk about them. They're not we don't like them. Okay. Yes. So anyway, Zcash, at this point in time, I'm trading speculatively. Okay. These aren't necessarily long-term investments I'm making.
Don't pretend you're an investor that takes due diligence and time. You're in and out dirty trading.
Scalping a profit,
you don't care what the business is, the underlying business. The underlying business could be whores and drugs. You don't care as long as you're scalping, you know, 10, 20% here and there. You don't care.
Oh, I care about the whores and the drugs. No, I do.
Yeah, too much.
You're just going to clip out just that one line.
Use that
as my answer. Those are some of the cryptos that I'm in at the moment, the ones I've just mentioned. But don't be surprised if even by the time the podcast goes out, I'm no longer in them, because they are speculative investments. And the reason is that we are so frothy now with Bitcoin and Ethereum. You know, they've risen so far. And any crash in those will drag down, no doubt, every other crypto. So, you know, I could easily be stopped out of all of those cryptos very easily. But you know, there's huge profit potential there, which is why I'm continuing to speculate, even in what I consider to be now quite a dangerous market.
Yeah. No, do you know what? People can say it's going to the moon, it's going to $100,000 million. All I know is this, you know, when everyone's very excited about something and they only think it goes one way, it's the old adage again, you know, everyone's on one side of the boat. Generally, the boat tips up. You know, when everyone's thinking, ooh, this is going high now, all the institutions are going to be... And when you can't see any downside... The downside happens generally, and that's.
But you keep saying when everyone's thinking, we don't know that everyone's thinking.
I bet
half the listeners to this podcast right now are thinking.
Hang on, you just said
down.
That.
I'll
you,
buy
you,
it you, when it's 20,000. I bet everyone's thinking that.
No, you have no idea that. You just said
no,
about
I have
half.
No idea.
You can't
You're
take
right.
a
survey. I'm just paying devil's advocate. I don't know. It's so hard to judge.
Yeah, all I'm saying is this: from retail people, I'm getting asked about all the time about Bitcoin and should have bought this and I'm buying some. And my father even has a good sentiment, litmus test. My father, 74, you know, has a problem getting on the internet, you know, generally. Isn't really tech and savvy, you know, which is not...
Does he call it Tinternet?
Yeah, no fault of his own, because he's born in a generation where the internet, you know, wasn't around at all, and he was in his... What is it, 20 years ago? He was in his 50s when it came about. So, you know, no fault of his own. Yeah. But when people like that are trying to get into a new tech they have no idea about because it's so hot and it's on the main... That's when you should worry. It's the old shoeshine guy, you know, analogy. That's
old
all.
Old shoeshine guy.
Yeah. Anything else? That. Anything else, Glenn? Anything else worth chatting about? Okay, goodbye.
Well, cheers, stocks.
I don't stocks. You're the crypto guy. We don't stocks, really. No,
I love the stocks. Actually, I prefer the stocks to the crypto.
Don't pretend you're an investor now, Glenn.
Higher and
Glenn,
higher.
Glenn, so we have you down as a dirty crypto trader. You can't clean yourself now in the first 2 minutes. Last 2 minutes of the podcast. You can't. You know, you're already dirty. Okay, you can't clean yourself. Pretend you're an investor. You can't put on the clothes of an investor because underneath. Your skin is dirty. It's a dirty trader skin. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. I guess so. Oh, so, buy my book because there's only one left at Amazon.
It's going crazy,
right,
isn't
it? It says only one left in stock.
That's another sign that we're at the top of the market in Bitcoin. When Glenn's book is selling like crazy, that people are genuinely super interested in it. They weren't interested when it was like, $3,000 for a Bitcoin, but now they are 46,000, 47,000.
Now it's got that number one bestseller stamp next to it. Number one bestseller. I mean,
is that you literally go in the shop and put a stamp on it? Look at that. Stamp it. Get that guy out of the shop. Again, what is he doing in here?
But yeah, you're absolutely right because, you know, my book was, I'm probably selling 10 times as many books as I was a couple of months ago.
So you're selling 10?
Things. Yeah, pretty much.
That's good. It's good that you should actually do a chart of book sales correlated to the Bitcoin price, you know, and to see where it goes. That's quite interesting, that. Do that. It'd be quite interesting. I don't know if it's an interesting fall, really. But Glenn, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak you next week.
Okay.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, GS Technologies up 55% to 3.1. At four, KR1 down 2% to 98.5. At three, Gene Drive up 9%, 12 pence, to 145. At two, Argo Blockchain down 2.7% to 126. And at one, a listed day, that's MGC Pharmaceuticals up 2%, 2.425 pence. Okay, time for the top five most read RNSs. They're as follows. At five, Cadence Minerals, update on the Amapa Iron Ore Project. Of course, I spoke to Kieran about that. At four, Hemogenics Pharma, allotment of shares. At three, DeepVerge. DeepVerge adds two virus containment laboratories. At two, UK Oil and Gas, judge upholds injunction against unlawful protests. And at one, Argo Blockchain, letter of intent signing. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.